the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys and maybe a guest or two discussing Bitcoin, Bitcoin equities, and the related macroeconomic space. It's not meant to be financial advice, so please, if you're doing any investing after listening to our program, do your own research, do your own due diligence, and understand that any money you invest can be lost. The show is meant for entertainment purposes only, and we hope you enjoy the program. Friends and enemies, welcome to another episode of the Canadian Bitcoiners Podcast, Wednesday interview edition. I'm here as always with my co-host, Len, and we are part of the CBP Media Network, you and me, buddy. Len, how are you doing? Do you want to see the shirt I have on today? Do you know who B.A. Johnston is? Hamilton legend. He's a guy who like drives around in a van playing... I would call the show as off color, honestly. I don't know if you can see what's on this shirt. I'll move the mic here. You can tell me what you think.
It's hard to tell what it is. If it was a B.A. Baracus shirt, I would tell you exactly what that is. That's
I don't even think we can say that guy's name without getting a strike after Mr. the content T? We played the other day. Yeah, that's Why? A picture of the Zeddy bear and a cartoon rendition of B.A. Johnston burning down a Walmart Supercenter.
Pain.
Yeah, high quality Canadian content. So, Len, we got Chris Johnson's here with us tonight of TSN, sports reporter, podcaster, YouTube guy, and most importantly, Bitcoiner. But before we get started, two sponsors, ShakePay, best place for Canadians to buy Bitcoin. And Len, you can do a bunch more stuff over there. If you use our promo code CBP, honestly, like the ads are going to be 3 minutes long here. So we got a number of things here, five things now.
Yeah.
$30 on your first 100. That's a no-brainer. I'm not even going to put a finger down for that, okay? They got Shaking Sats. Use our promo code, shake your phone every day. You get sats to your wallet every day. Great. Shake Paid. You can get anything you buy with your CAD balance and on the Shake Pay card given back to you in Satoshis. Awesome. Sats back. Everything you buy, you get 2% back on the first $5,000, 1% back in perpetuity after that. Shake Squads. You and four friends get together. All you guys form a squad. You name your squad. You have fun with your squad. Every time somebody buys, all of you get 42 Satoshis. They also have the
Shake Paid.
I think I said that. Did I say that? Maybe I did.
If not, then the last thing that's on
they
the list.
They just added the beta.
Yeah.
Saving Sats. Is that what it's called?
Shaker.
I don't know. You guys can use Saving Sats if you want, if you pay us more money for that IP. I signed up a bunch of people today. You put CAD in your account and they just pay you Bitcoin interest. Do I have that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you keep it on there for a period of time, and you get
only downside there. Is you have to hold the CAD. That's the only downside.
Yeah, it's
which I don't typically do. I don't know about you. I don't typically hold CAD in my ShakePay account. Maybe I'll start. I don't know. We'll see.
My pockets
who's the
other
sponsor?
Well, since you have a lot of Bitcoin, why not use the Ledin platform and earn some interest on some of your Bitcoin and open up an account with our referral code? Fund your Ledin account with 150,000 sats or 75 USDC. Keep it on a Ledin platform for 15 consecutive days and it'll give you 10 USDC. Also, if you do have a lot of Bitcoin on your stack, which we all, I think, do at this point in time, and you have some bills to pay, but you don't want to sell your Bitcoin because nobody does, you could borrow against it and Ledin is there to help you out with a 50% loan to value against your Bitcoin. They also have the B2X option. So if you think the price of Bitcoin is going up, you could just simply do the B2X, double up your Bitcoin stack, pull out when the price goes up significantly, pull out, and you're good to go. Now you have some more Bitcoin simply by using the B2X option and timing the market correctly. And the last thing they have is the Bitcoin-backed mortgages. That's an industry first. They got a lot of fanfare when this was done, but not available in any jurisdiction. So make sure you check their website where that's being offered. But since you're there, check to see what the interest rates are for the savings and borrowing rates because they change on a month-to-month basis.
We did have someone in the chat the other day say that they were expanding the jurisdictional availability of those things. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's true or not true. Maybe we could talk to our sponsor instead of getting our information about Ledin from people in the chat. What do you think? Good idea, bad idea?
I like it. Let's do it.
I like that Pinky. Remember that old Pinky in the Brain skit? Good idea, bad idea. That's maybe just a night. Do you remember
make
that?
It so. No, yeah. I never watched Pinky in the Brain.
87, born in 87, giving myself away there. Chris Johnston is here. Sir, it's great to see you. I know a little bit of inside baseball here for people listening. Chris has his fantasy football draft, if I have that right, right after this. So, Chris, let's talk about that first, since I'm a big fantasy football guy. Len is not, but it doesn't matter because we split the show 50-50, and if I want to talk about it, there's nothing really much he can do.
I'm just on the other half.
Where are you picking in your draft? Do you know yet? Are you guys waiting till like, what is it, 20 minutes before Yahoo drops the order if you're going random? Do you know where you're picking yet?
No, I'm picking 12th because I won last year. So we do a snake draft, and so I got last pick in the first round, first pick in the second round.
So what are you thinking? You guys have PPR, full PPR, no PPR? What are you looking at grabbing in that? That's a good slot. I do like the end of the first round or like near the turn. I'm a big fan of that area.
Yeah, I like that I won. I don't like having two picks really quickly together. It's actually okay at the top of the draft. It's more when you get later on, you're rushing the pick. And you know, I did some prep, but you know, I can't profess to have spent the last, you know, 3 months preparing for this.
You better repeat your performance. And when are the Leafs going to upgrade their goaltending? Are they going to call a Cujo out of retirement? Or what's the story there?
I think they're going to stick with what they got for the time being. You know, I'm sure part of the thinking, though, in the plan is that they can make a trade during the season if they have to. And so, you know, you're correct if you're a Leafs fan out there to probably be a little nervous about it. You know, goaltending performances can vary wildly, even with the best goaltenders. And in this case, the Leafs are putting their faith in two guys that you know, Matt Murray hasn't been there for a couple of years at the top of the game. And, you know, they're hoping that they can patch it together. But they're probably not going to update anything between now and October unless there's an injury in training camp. And so you're going to have to wait during the season if they upgrade at all.
High quality content there for Leafs fans, although I don't think there are many around these days. Maybe just you, Len. I'm not sure. Chris, tell us a bit about who you are and how you ended up in the third panel here tonight. Because I don't think a lot of people, unless you're really into the Bitcoin scene and you've heard us talk, like we've talked about you before, people are not going to know who you are, how a guy who is a sports media personality wound up on the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast. Help me connect the dots.
Well, I guess the short story is I'm a hockey journalist and have been all my adult life. This is the career I've always wanted. I was a little kid who was enamored with hockey and never sort of lost that love for it. And, you know, I've worked a couple different places over the years, Hockey Night in Canada, but, you know, now have an arrangement of work that you can see my writing at North Star Bets. I do TV at TSN, as you mentioned, and I have my own podcast, The Chris Johnson Show, which doesn't include any Bitcoin talk, at least at this point. It's just been hockey only. And so that's what I do professionally. But, you know, I think like people in all professions, you know, I found my way to Bitcoin a little bit more randomly. And you know, a lot of people that do the line of work I do, guys, you know, they make the joke, like, I thought there'd be no math. You know, most journalists, particularly those that work in sports like myself, you know, don't really like math. But I was kind of a kid who always enjoyed math class. And you know, I really like logic and logical thinking. And, you know, I really got orange-pilled in the early days of the pandemic when I saw what was going on everywhere else. I had a chance to stop professionally. The amount of travel I used to do was pretty crazy, and devote some more time to Bitcoin. And you know, once I saw it, I couldn't unsee it. And so it's really been a couple of years now that I've had an interest in it. I'm merely a pleb. Don't profess to be an expert on it, but certainly you know, spend a good deal of my free time, which, you know, as we get into the season here, will be small, you know, listening to podcasts like this one and you know, all the ones kind of in the space. I certainly follow Bitcoin Twitter, and, you know, I'm fascinated. This is totally sort of become one of my biggest passions, I would say. My biggest sort of non-professional passions is just figuring out what Bitcoin is, putting my mind around it, and of course, trying to stack some sats.
Tell us what brought you here to this point. Is it number go up? Is it the technology behind it, the network, the 21 million? I'd love to know what's the driving factor which got you here in the Bitcoin world.
Well, I guess there's probably a little bit of all of it in there. You know, I think as my understanding has deepened, we've seen a lot more concerning things happening, at least from where I sit, you know, in all of our countries. I mean, I live here in Canada, but a lot of the governments are doing the same things over in Europe and even challenges down in the US. Obviously, we're seeing inflation. You know, numbers spike basically everywhere around the world. And so it probably started as a little bit number go up, but I've sort of found a solution to a problem that I couldn't maybe put my finger on before. And so, you know, I'd say at this stage, Bitcoin really is just for me, it gives me a little bit of hope. I think quite honestly, if I hadn't found this community, the number of really intelligent speakers on the subject that, you know, as I say, really make up my free time, I'd probably be walking around in a fog right now with you know, the news we're hit with every day. You know, they just put the rates up again here in Canada, you know, today as we're recording this. But, you know, it just feels like we're a society that's a little bit out of control. And so Bitcoin for me has become just it's given me a certain peace of mind. And, you know, as I probably got into it hoping to make some money. I think as time's gone on, that's just become a little less important to me. Obviously, I hope that that's where it ends up one day. You know, I'm a believer that this is inevitable over a period of time. But, you know, I think what's kept me in it, quite honestly, is I've just found an interesting community of thinkers, really passionate people, really principled people. And also, I found a little bit of a parting of the clouds that are hanging over all of us these days. You know, I think it does make me feel a little more comfortable that, you know, by having some of my net worth, you know, tied up in Bitcoin, that I'm going to be safe no matter, you know, what happens here.
That's great commentary there about the sort of parting of the clouds. I think we feel like that too. And I know on the show before, we've spoken about how Bitcoin Twitter is a lot of things to a lot of people. It's, you know, a place to share memes, it's a place to get, you know, good content, speak to a lot of smart people, as you mentioned. And I think most importantly, it's a place where a lot of people, plebs, you know, are dissecting the same information that we're trying to dissect. You know, how much of this do I believe about why inflation is here and the Putin price hike or the war or energy crisis? How much of this should I believe? Do I think that Tiff Macklem is a competent, you know, leader of a Canadian institution? I'm not sure. I've in fact never said whether or not I think he's a competent leader. And I will never say that whether or not I think he is because of the, you know, podcast that we have. And I think, Chris, you know, one of the important things that you mentioned there too, is that the number is, you know, the number go down right now, but you know, at some point in the future, hopefully it does go up. But in the meantime, you stuck around. And so, you know, when you're talking to people about Bitcoin, whether it's professionally, personally, what do you tell people when they get on you about, oh, Chris, you're wasting your time here. Look at the price. It's way down. I'm always curious about that because I think about my own life with my friends, you know, my professional life especially. And I think, you know, everyone knows something is wrong, but no one thinks this is the answer. So when they tell you, you know, you're wasting your time or you're wasting your money, what's your response typically? Do you have one that you like to share with them?
Well, by and large, if I'm being honest, I've sort of stopped talking about this. So even stepping out here and you know, discussing in this forum is a little new. You know, that's been its own learning curve for me or journey. I mean, where I started, quite honestly, Joey, is Bitcoin literally was hope for me. Like that's all it was. Like, I'm not telling anyone what to do with their investments. I'm not telling you what percentage to allocate, anything like that. I sort of thought it initially, if I just talked about it a little bit, if there's other people out there that are curious about it, maybe engage in my content in my other day job, they might go, hey, what is this Bitcoin thing? And I might just help lead people to where they're going to find themselves eventually. But there was a huge onslaught of pushback against that. I found some of that pushback to some degree in my personal life too with people. And so the way I've sort of adapted, I just generally don't say too much about it publicly or even privately to my friends. You know, anyone I have though talked to about it, always from the beginning, I said, if you're going to put money into this, for me, it's got to be a 5-year investment. Like, don't put any money in there that, you know, if you just look at the halving cycles over 12, 13 years, you know, it's pretty evident what has happened each time Bitcoin has halved. You know, there's no guarantees, of course, moving forward that will always be the case. But to me, it was a pretty logical train of thought that you should have some allocation there. And if you're willing to hold it, you're probably going to work out okay. You know, I'm only 2 years into this. So I guess if it was March 2020, you're doing okay still if you took my advice. But, you know, there were people out there I was speaking to when it was, you know, 60 or 70K Canadian. Who, you know, would be down money. But, you know, I think that it's important to get a position. You know, I've come to sort of, as I've evolved, I think DCAing makes a lot of sense, and just kind of waiting and learning more about it. But, you know, generally I've stopped using my platform to talk about it because it just wasn't worth the hassle. And I kind of had one notable moment on Twitter. I don't know if we want to get into it, but you know,
absolutely, we want to get into it.
Let's not rehash anything that
it's important.
You can, because I can explain it now months later, you know, without any sort of, I can explain how I got to that position. But, you know, for me, it was just, I found it crazy that, okay, look, if someone wants to invest their money in other places, I'm not one out there saying, don't do this, don't do that. You know, personally, I've just been a Bitcoin only investor in this space, but, you know, I'm not working for anybody. I was just trying to be helpful that maybe I figured a few people, you know, I have 200 and something thousand followers on Twitter. Like, maybe there's 100 people out of those people that are haven't gotten all the way, but they're curious about this and they might like me, and it might be just a chance to help them. You know, I wasn't trying to to push anyone who didn't want to be there. But the amount of pushback for me, again, this just comes from hope. I'm not saying you can go buy it anywhere you want. I know you have sponsors, but you could buy it any of the platforms to do so. Like, I'm not pushing any agenda here. I just think that it's going to bring peace to our lives. So, you know, I think that I think it's the solution. Honestly, if you listen to a guy like Jeff Booth and you really listen to him or you read his book, and like, to me, he just lays it out so logically. You know, it's not about we're not in some war here. I know sometimes I think for people like yourselves that are in the space, it must feel that way because there's a lot of really aggressive stuff that happens on Twitter in particular that I've seen. But, you know, the truth is, I think that this is going to happen no matter what any of us individually think. And I just would like to help a few other people maybe get there if they're most of the way down the rabbit hole already.
If we could tell you some of the war stories we have, especially dealing with banks, but we won't go there. Let's just talk.
I've been following that a little bit on Twitter.
it's making its rounds, it's looking like. But I want to transition a little bit more into the professional sports field. And well, people that are playing hockey and even people that are retired from hockey, namely Chris Pronger, came out not too long ago and made a very, very lengthy tweet about what it's like to be a pro athlete and the amount of money that you get in the end after paying for nutritionist, physiotherapist, dietitian, agent, the list goes on and on. A $30 million contract gets whittled down to, you know, single digit millions. It seems like a lot of money in the end but still, there's still a lot of expenses that go on. So what I'm trying to get at is a lot of these pro players, they're feeling the pinch too now, especially after they retire. They may not have the same earning capacity they have while playing. Are they talking about what they should be doing with their money these days? Or is this something that is still in a tight circle and you don't hear much about it, much grumbling with players?
Well, it's a huge issue for every pro athlete. I mean, basically, there are exceptions. Chris Pronger might even be one of them. But essentially, these guys earn their best money their whole life between age 20 and 30. And almost to a man, I mean, the percentage of guys that move on, Len and Joey, to other careers beyond their playing careers and make more money, it's would be a tiny, tiny number. Of course, there's instances we can cite some people who pivoted and or maybe even just found, you know, their way in hockey management and found more success there. But by and large, you're earning all this money early in your career. Inflation has been a problem. I mean, we're entering crazy periods of inflation now, but it's been a problem for every human for the last 50 years, you know, basically since the 70s. And you know, if you earn all your money at the start, no matter what that number is, and you're trying to retire 40 years later, and maybe some athletes are trying to retire at 35 or 40, it's hard to stretch that money out and keep a certain lifestyle. And so, you know, I don't know in hockey, I have to assume it's at least what the population is in terms of the percentage of acceptance. I only know personally of a few current NHL players that invest in Bitcoin. I'm sure there's a lot I don't know about. You know, there's definitely not a culture of flashing it around. I know some people who work for teams that invest in Bitcoin, mostly because they're people that have found out I'm a Bitcoiner and obviously I know them and it just sort of come up in conversation. So they're out there, but in the hockey world, it's not crazy talked about. You know, there's a former player by the name of Peter Holland, played for Toronto and Arizona, Anaheim, a couple other teams, you know, had a career afterwards in Europe. You know, he actually retired, and I wrote a story about him that appeared in the Toronto Star this year. He retired from his team in Sweden basically because he'd lost the love of hockey and he had kind of gone down the rabbit hole himself. And now, you know, he's working in the industry. You know, I would presume, I haven't talked to Peter, you know, recently, but it's fair to assume that he's got connections in the sport and part of what he's trying to do is spread this message. So, you know, I think it's getting there slowly in hockey. You know, what stands out to me is the NFL is the ultimate, right? And we're seeing so many NFL players be public, whether they have sponsorships with Strike or one of the other companies, but there's a lot of guys taking their salary in Bitcoin in that league. And you know, I think it's smart. NFL players don't have guaranteed contracts. And so that's one difference with an NHL player, even though, you know, as Chris Pronger noted in that tweet string you mentioned, I mean, a lot of the money quickly goes away. What you see reported in the media or on Twitter is not really close to what they end up taking home because there's agent fees and there's money held back by the league in escrow, plus, you know, the typical taxes that a high earner would pay. You know, but this is a solution to everyone's problem. I mean, it's pretty obvious. And so I think you're going to see a rush of athletes continue, you know, going this way because it just makes a lot of sense. And you know, back when I was still tweeting about Bitcoin, every once in a while an NHL player would like a tweet I did, and I always sort of saw that as a sign, like a wink that that they're paying attention, they're into it too. But you know, at this point, it's I can't say it's that prevalent yet in the NHL, at least as far as I can tell.
Chris, what do you think the shortcoming is as far as these guys learning how to manage money? I know in the NFL, there's been, you know, quite a few stories over the years. I think also a documentary or two made about the lack of interest the league has in helping young players manage their newfound wealth. A lot of these kids, you know, whether they're bright or not, doesn't really matter because they don't spend a lot of time in school. And so without spending time in school and starting off at, you know, quote unquote, entry level gigs and paying rent and things of that nature, you don't learn some of the skills that are difficult to pick up no matter what your IQ score is. What is the NHL doing in that regard? Do you know anything about that? Is that something that the players talk about that, you know, I can think about the NBA, for example. There's a sort of introductory week or 2 week period for the rookies where they talk about everything from what not to do with a female to what to do with your paycheck to, you know, should you be partying in what cities and how is that supposed to look and the sort of conduct you're supposed to carry yourself with. Does the league that you work most closely with make that a priority for its rookies? Do you have any insight on that?
They do. And it's funny you ask because it happened this week actually in Washington, D.C., where the rookie class of NHL players was down there with the NHL Players Association. You know, and it does run the gamut to social media, to all kinds of things, but ultimately financial literacy is part of that. And I think really this is sort of an educated guess, but it's a fairly decent one. I think, you know, a lot of players trust their money with investors or advisors, you know, as they, I think they should. You know, if you're 20 years old and you start cashing $1 million checks, you know, I don't think it, the odd person, I think, is capable at that age to really manage that properly. But, you know, I think if you're an athlete who's busy doing other things, it's probably smart to have some help with that. And I think we're just at a point yet where Bitcoin, you know, isn't part of enough investors' portfolios, right? I mean, some of these guys are still hawking a version of the 60-40 or whatever. And, you know, it's not to be critical of them, but I just think it hasn't infiltrated those ranks yet. But, you know, sort of the way I see it playing out bigger picture all over the world, I think it'll happen similarly for athletes. It just takes one person to get in that room. Like if you had Greg Foss come and speak to those players this week, you know, he might, by, you know, just to name a guy that's pretty passionate and grabs your attention when he's speaking. And, you know, I know Greg's has been involved in hockey with his own, you know, kids and stuff over the years. You know, he might be able to orange pill a few. And, you know, I think certainly players talk amongst themselves, you know, especially older guys about investments and the like. And so, and look, this, I should actually say this could be happening on a much larger scale already that I don't know about. I kind of feel like I might know more about it just because, you know, I am associated with this in certain circles and there's a few players, you know, obviously won't mention any names because they're not personally talking about it publicly, but there's definitely a few players that are heavily interested, heavily invested. But it's, you know, I think there needs to be more education before we really get a critical mass of them.
Hypothetically, if you were ever asked to provide some information, and of course, this is not financial advice, this is purely theoretical. What would you provide? What information would you provide to a player, particularly young athletes, when they first enter into their particular game?
I would definitely hedge it. You know, I wouldn't say don't take my word for this. So, you know, I'll explain maybe in simple terms, why I think it's important, why I put some of my own money into it. But I'd make it very clear that they should do their own work and research. And you know, I think the hardest part for me, and again, you guys are far more advanced in this space, but even when I have told some of my own friends about it that bought it, it's hard to explain to someone, you know, how to custody it. And because, you know, it's very important to, you know, my view to take it off the exchange and to figure that all that out. And that actually represents, in my view, a bit of a barrier point to initial entry because it's just a lot to throw at someone that's putting their mind around this. You know, I can say having gone through the process and learned about it basically all on my own with podcasts and other resources that are sort of publicly available, it's way less intimidating once you do it and it makes sense. And you know, you can feel, you actually draw comfort from figuring it all out. But, you know, it's a lot to tell someone. And so, you know, the last thing I would want to do is say, hey, go to this so-and-so, you know, exchange and buy a bunch of this stuff and hold it there, because what happens if there's a run on that exchange? And I would just feel awful. And so, you know, no players have asked specifically for my advice, but I would make sure that they're talking to a professional. I might send them some of, you know, I really like listening to Michael Saylor in particular. I connect with him. I find he has a really good way of distilling complex ideas into pretty straightforward, you know, some of them are diatribes. He takes one question like you just asked me and can talk for 15 minutes, and like, it's captivating. You know, I'd probably maybe send over something like that to start to get comfortable with it. Yeah, I think everyone has to have their own journey. I mean, really what we're talking about is self-custodying some of your own wealth. And you have to be, there's varying levels of ways to do that. I know that there's third party ways that you can have double signatures and all that stuff, you know, but like ultimately what you want to be doing is controlling your own keys. And so I think that you have to sort of go step by step. You know, my view is to take it slowly and figure it out. And you probably become, the more you do that, I think you're more likely to go fully down the rabbit hole, because that's sort of what I did. It's not like I came in, I mean, I don't have I'm not sitting on tons of money anyway, but I didn't come in and just buy crazy amounts or anything. You know, it's just more over time, the more I've understood, the more comfortable I've got with it, the more I believe that, you know, we're looking at something that's going to really have a positive influence on the world. I know it already has in some, you know, third world places. You know, I think it's already turned around El Salvador's economy in a lot of ways in just 1 year. You know, but I think that this really is going to have this massive effect on people. But, you know, I didn't necessarily know that the first day. And so I see it as a journey rather than you just do these three things and then you're hooked.
That's interesting. I wasn't going to ask you this, Chris, but I think you probably have a good answer. What other behaviors of yours have you seen change since you went down the rabbit hole? I think we all have a number of things, you know, bad habits we kicked or longer term thinking we began to embrace. What about you? What have you changed since you became a Bitcoiner?
Well, just about everything. To be short, I mean, my view on the world's changed, honestly. You know, some of the tangible things I could point to is I was a runner earlier in my life and my career got really busy. I traveled a lot. I got out of it. And during the pandemic, I started running every single day. And, you know, as we're recording this, my streak's at about 870 days now, where I've run all those days. And, you know, quite honestly, 90% of those days or more, I've been listening to a Bitcoin podcast of some persuasion while running. And so I've gotten in much better shape. You know, which I can't point to it just because of Bitcoin. I think that the world stopping and the pandemic gave me the opportunity to have more time and to reconnect with what I wanted to, how I wanted to live my life. I think going down the rabbit hole on those runs has been really beneficial. And now, you know, I kind of have a longer time preference for a lot of things. So that's sort of a tangible habit, I guess, that has started since I got into Bitcoin or kind of in concert with. But, you know, I think the way I see the world is a lot differently. I actually am more at peace now. I mean, it's been a long 2 years in a lot of ways. But I actually feel like I have a bit more control over my life. I'm more hopeful long term. And yeah, it's been really positive, but it was a journey, guys. It's also during this pandemic, you know, living in the Toronto area here, we were locked down like crazy. I mean, it was really disruptive to a lot of people's lives. I'm not even making a political commentary there. I'm just stating the obvious that it was a hard 2 years, I think, for a lot of people, and that included me. And so I've had to kind of work through that. But I think Bitcoin's been one of the beacons that helped pull me through.
I want to hear your thoughts on the general economy as a whole. I don't want to lay blame on anyone or any people in particular. Just I want to get your thoughts on it. Today, the Bank of Canada, they raised rates another 75 basis points. So there seems to be some action on their part to try to address higher rising costs. So I'd like to hear your thoughts about what's going on with the economy, the direction that people are trying to do to try to fix things. And if you think there's going to be any hope that they'll be able to resolve some of the problems that we're experiencing, such as higher costs of goods.
I mean, I'll start off with a naive statement. I hope so. You know, I'm not sitting here rooting for everything to burn and fall apart, but it sort of feels in some ways like that could happen. You know, again, not just in Canada, you just look at certain places around the world. I mean, G20 countries like Italy are in serious problems. I mean, Canada's a G7, but I'm nervous. I'm not afraid to say that. I'm nervous about the direction of the country. you know, those, that Bank of Canada set of tweets a week ago or whatever, where they were sort of trying to recuse themselves from any blame for inflation, was like, this is where things in the world, though, like, seriously would freak me out. And if I didn't have a Bitcoin, because it's just like, there's a lot of misinformation coming from places that you think, you know, should really have everyone's backs. You know, I'm not sitting here looking to just blame the Bank of Canada. I recognize that it's not like one evildoer has resulted in this. There's a lot of different factors, but I think to try to say that they had nothing to do with it is insane. You know, seven tweets that, like, I can't even believe that. I actually thought it was a parody, honestly. Like, I read that thing, I probably read that 20 times. Like, I keep going back. I'm like, they haven't deleted this. Like, I hope someone has archived it, because it's not going to age very well, I would suggest. And anyway, you know, so I don't know, because I don't have the sophistication, right? I don't have the banking background that a lot of the experts that speak on these podcasts do. But I will say that you see the collision of the rising rates. You know, I have some debt on houses and things. I see, you know, what it does. Like, I can see just in this year how my payments have shifted, because it wasn't all fixed debt. I can imagine someone maybe a little with tighter margins than I personally have, like how scary that would be. You know, I see what's happening when I go fill up at the gas pump, or, you know, understanding that we're going to probably hit some form of energy crisis, and our energy bills are going to go up. I mean, it's really squeezing the most vulnerable people in society, frankly. You know what I mean? I'm lucky. I feel the pinch, but you know, at this point in time, I have enough of a safety net that it's not as real and present, but it scares me. And you know, I think what happens, of course, in inflationary environments is that the people at the lower end of the wealth scale, the economy runs away from them even more. I mean, they're disincentivized to work or to participate in a constructive manner in general in the economy. And I'm worried about what sort of social impacts that'll have on this country. I mean, I love being Canadian. You know, I was born here. I'm proud to be from here. My dad immigrated to this country and built a life for our family that I've been lucky to live, and it's been great. But I'm nervous about the direction of things. So, you know, it's a bit of a topsy-turvy answer to your question, but I don't know what's going to happen, but I do have some fear about the direction we're headed. And, you know, I think we need some leadership more capable of directing things. You know, I just feel as though fiscal policy has been thrown by the wayside. You know, and I understand maybe in the early days of a pandemic where there's a lot of information that isn't known if you go back to March of 2020. Well, look where we are now. We're a country that, you know, has very high vaccination rates compared to the world. And so things should be resuming to some degree of normalcy. And I don't know if that those steps are being taken, quite honestly. I mean, raising rates is one thing, but there's a lot of other, you know, there's a lot of other spending that's going on in the creation of money that has me a bit nervous.
Yeah, it's true. And I don't think a lot of people know about that money creation mechanism and the availability of those things to the people at the top of the food chain, so to speak. It's scary times. If we could, let's talk a bit about meetups, Bitcoin meetups. Now, we met you at the ShakePay meetup. You went to the other meetup that we were at. I can't remember the name of that bar, the Safari, I think it was called.
Safari Bar and Grill?
Safari Bar and Grill, yeah. You were there as well. Now, Chris, you have, you're very humble, and so I don't expect you to give me an affirmative response here, but you've amassed some amount of fame, my friend, okay? So at those meetups, only guy maybe with more clout than you is Foss. When you go to those meetups, what do you see? And you know, when I ask that, what I mean is when you're talking to people in the crowd, right, you get all walks there, right? Like you mentioned, some people maybe with tighter margins than you, tighter margins than us, et cetera, et cetera. What do you really like about going to those meetups? And what would you say to people who are maybe afraid to go to something like that? Because it can be intimidating. A lot of strangers, if you're the only Bitcoiner in your life, which many of us are or were at some point, what would you say to them?
Well, the first one I went to, and because time's a bit of a flat circle, I can't give you the exact, it was about a year ago, maybe in Waterloo, there's a brewery out there that there
Innocente.
Was one.
Innocente. 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 Yeah.
And I went by myself, honestly. I had to rent a car in Toronto and drove out there myself to go. Like that's my interest level. It was a little intimidating in a sense, because I didn't know what I was going to find. You know, what I found at the three or so that I've been to is a lot of people that want to engage you in conversation. You know, there's almost like, I wish there's a better word for it, but I'm struggling for it. It's almost like a room of love, honestly. Like I think a lot of people have good intentions. There's, you know, I had at the Innocente one, I had a pretty lively debate, you know, not that got crossed any lines or anything, but you know, there's people are passionate about what they believe in. And, you know, it's a cross section of society, I might say. Like, it, you know, it's not necessarily people that you'd peg to be my friend, but I've actually made some friends at these events and stayed in touch with people. And, you know, I can't always make it to them and what have you, but I'm still just trying to learn, honestly. Like I don't come into this thinking I know everything. I'm sort of cognizant that there might be rough days ahead for Bitcoin. I don't know if we'll see any sort of attacks on it in some way, shape or form, whether it's, you know, creating, you know, some sort of legislation against it, whatever. You know, I want to be involved in the community because it's important to me. It's something that's given me a lot of hope, as I mentioned earlier. And you know, I can learn from these people, honestly. I mean, yeah, I'm at Innocente, and I won't name any names. I'm like talking to guys that were buying Bitcoin in like 2011 or 2012. I mean, these people are, I'm just guessing, but rather wealthy, at least in Bitcoin terms. But you know, they didn't share with how many Bitcoins they were buying for like $5 a pop back in the day. But I'm sure even if it was a modest investment, they probably haven't regretted it if they're still in the space. And it's pretty cool to learn from them. And, you know, I've relied on some of that advice too, when I was figuring out my own wallet situation and, you know, safe ways to do that, which companies to look for. And so, you know, really I appreciate the community and, you know, I want to be involved in it, and you'll see me at more, guys, for sure. I don't know if there's anything currently planned, but, you know, as long as I'm in town and it fits in my schedule, I like to be there. And, you know, one day I want to go to one of these conferences too. You know, it hasn't been a possibility for me just yet, but you know, I'd like to, I'm really interested in this. I mean, I think you can tell, like it's, I'm listening to almost an hour podcast a day on these runs. I mean, I kind of know all the figures from afar that are involved. You know, I've met Greg Foss and I've met, you know, some of the people here in Canada, but I'd like to meet some of the other people in the space. And, you know, basically I'm honestly at the point in my life, if you said like, who's your ideal golf foursome, dead or alive? I mean, I'd have Michael Saylor in my foursome probably. If I ever get to meet him or have, you know, one of those things, if you have one dinner with five people dead or alive, who would you want? So I think Michael Saylor is already on my list. So hopefully I meet him one day too.
It better be a long dinner, because once you ask him a question, it just goes on. And it's no disrespect to him. He's very knowledgeable and he's able to answer every question. But I have one non-related question, but I'm going to pass it off to Joey if you have another question, because the question I have is not related to Bitcoin or anything. So
we're going to get him out on your question. And then I want to ask him the question we normally ask our guests to finish. And then he's going to go do the fastest mock draft in fantasy football history before he gets going for his league.
So this totally non-related question, my brother-in-law will kill me if I don't ask you. Do you recall a peasant in Brampton yelling at you at a gas station, calling out your name, and you waving back? This must have happened in the past 2 or 3 months, he said. But apparently he waved at you, called your name, and you waved at him. But this is the only thing I have to ask you. I'm sorry. It's some peasant that must have yelled at you.
I do remember that, honestly. I'm just trying to remember why I was up there, because that's not sort of a part of the world I frequent. But I'm trying to like give you, but I absolutely remember that. Like that happened 100%.
Thank you. Okay.
Unbelievable. Okay, Chris, you've been an outstanding guest, sir. We appreciate you coming on. We have to ask, as we do with all our guests, if you and Elliot Friedman, okay, the COVID chameleon when it comes to hairstyles, both on the top of his head and underneath his chin, if you and Elliot Friedman are in a parking lot next to each other, okay, both of you are wearing your finest pair of shorts, t-shirts, running shoes, etc., and 40 yards away down this asphalt jungle is a checkered flag finish line, who's winning a 40-yard dash between the two of you, and by how much?
I would dust him. he can get me a lot. If you were going to ask professionally who's breaking more trades or who's doing that, Elliot wins that all day long. But the one thing that I would not have any trouble doing is beating him in a race of any length. You could do 40 yards, you could do 40 kilometers, and I got him in both.
What about Gino Retta? Would you take Gino Retta out?
Gino Retta.
I've got too much respect for Gino. I got way too much respect for Gino. You know how like you might be at the stage where you let your dad win a game of golf, Gino would dust me in the 40 or the 40K just because he's a legend in my business.
He's earned
God
it.
God bless Gino Retta. Great Italian Canadian, by the way. Chris Johnson.
You know what? I don't know if he's in Bitcoin, but he's big into stock market and he loves. When I go on the set with him, he's always talking about investments. He always knows if Bitcoin's up or down, but I don't think he's a Bitcoiner. I don't want to dox him either, but I think he's definitely interested in the space and he pays a lot of attention to the financial markets.
Next guest on the CBP, Len, Gino Retta. We got it. We'll book him. We got a guy who can introduce us. Chris, before you go, tell people where they can find you. All that good stuff. Floor's all yours, man.
The easiest place to find me is at Reporter Chris on Twitter or Instagram. Twitter, I stick to hockey stuff. So if you're not interested in that, I won't be offended if you don't follow. Instagram's a little bit more in my personal space. And hopefully you can follow me somewhere in the Bitcoin space as time goes along. I mean, certainly it's my hope to step into this a little bit more and to be a bit more at the forefront, but I'm just figuring out the best way to do that.
Awesome. Chris Johnson, everyone. Thanks for coming on. Thanks for listening. We'll see you soon.
Thanks, guys. Be well.
Take care.
Well done. Great job, Chris.